We had a collaboration with some Chinese scientists.
Here we have a vaccine. What is the problem? Get over it.
Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%.
I hope that it can occur in a civil way. I mean civil in a special way, peaceful.
The biggest question, maybe in economics and politics of the coming decade, will be what to do with all these useless people.
I just see the need for such a dialogue, and I see the need for action. I see the need for a great reset.
We are 1,495 days into 14 days to flatten the curve. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Johnny Engston alongside Melissa. How are you, Melissa?
I'm alive.
You're alive. Bruce isn't here anymore to say he's healthy and alive all week. So yeah. I guess it has to be you now, doesn't it? Well, that's good. I'm glad you're alive. It's good to see you. Are we feeling well? Yeah, thank you. Are we feeling well?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's good.
Getting my exercise. I had good night's sleep.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Yeah. You know, you have to have, that's actually, I'm glad you brought that up. We're actually going to get into some health and wellness starting this week. And we did have a bit of an off week last week because Marty was down in Australia, but the listeners did get to hear a phone call that he and I had. Ned was out of the country. He was up in, he wasn't out of the country. He was actually almost to Scotland last week. And then, of course, Bruce is out, and I had to set up Vince coming up this week, and we're going to have him on regular now to talk about health and wellness. And of course, today is your day. You're once a fortnight. It is good to see you. And I suppose we will start by getting involved with, should we start with the Middle East problem first? You want to start there, and then we'll get into Ukraine, because that kind of like rolls into it, doesn't it? You know, that's kind of what they want to create.
Sure. Let's start in the Middle East.
All right. Well, a couple of nights ago, the Iranians decided they were going to get a wild hair because of that bombing of that embassy in Damascus. And they said, okay, we're going to hit Israel directly. And you know what? That was a big deal. Whether it was successful or not, that was a big deal. I could be mistaken. That is the first time in history that the Iranians have hit Israel directly without using a proxy group, I think. I could be mistaken, but that was a big deal when that happened. I really couldn't believe that was going on.
Yes and no. I mean, I read something similar, and I'm not sure if it was the first time they struck directly or the first time they struck directly from Iran.
From Iran, yes.
And not just using proxy groups, but, you know, okay. But whatever. The way that I've heard this characterized, and even from official U.S. sources, is it's not that big of a deal. And the reason why it was characterized that way is because nothing hit its target. Not much damage was caused. The military analysts who studied the events said that it appeared that this was done calculatedly by Iran to send a message, but not to do any big damage. Now, that's an interesting thing, if you consider it that way. So the U.S., for the most part, now you're going to get a lot of political, oh, this is outrageous, and we stand by Israel no matter what. But the military talking heads have said, it really appears that this was war game theater, not a real strike, or it would have been different.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I did see go on.
Well, I was just going to say it's historical, but I'm not sure that it's, you know, it was calculated to do damage.
I did see, I think actually the only damage that I was able to ascertain was one of their airports, military airports, one of their runways had a crate, mm-hmm. or like I had a hole blown in it, and that was it. That was really all that happened. I don't believe, maybe I missed it. I'm not sure, but I don't believe there were even any casualties.
No, I don't think so.
They did say they were only going to be aiming at military targets, nothing civilian. And I don't think even the footage that I was watching from Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, I didn't see any actual buildings or anything being hit. So. Mm-hmm. The only thing I saw were drone swarms that were flying over. They caught them coming over Syria, and they caught them flying over Iraq, obviously. And they had some cruise missiles coming across, you know, because you can only fly cruise missiles at a certain altitude, and they're a bit slower. And then, of course, they mm-hmm. had long-range ballistic missiles that they were sending over. Mm-hmm. And some of them didn't even make it. I did see that some of those were, they lost their fuel canisters over Iraq somewhere, and they landed in the middle of the desert. So, yeah.
Now, yeah.
What is concerning is what I, if it turns out to be accurate, what is concerning is what I was going over with you in soundcheck, and that was the Iranians have, of course, they've got their nuclear facilities that they're working on. All countries, I'm pretty sure, I believe even the Chinese have to abide by this. Now, that's not to say that they do or they don't skate around it. Same thing with the Russians. I don't know, or the North Koreans for that matter. But anybody that has a nuclear facility in their country has to have IAEA inspectors present, because we all have to abide by a certain standard to make sure that everything's safe, because you don't want to have a nuclear meltdown, which is understandable.
Let me ask a question here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Does Israel have to have those inspectors?
Yes, they have nuclear facilities. I would assume so.
Well, it's my understanding. I mean, we'd have to fact check me here, but it's my understanding that Israel has routinely denied inspectors.
Are we talking about nuclear power facilities? Or are we talking about?
Yeah.
Really? Okay.
No, we're talking about nuclear. Well, I think Israel claims not to be in the manufacturing business, right?
They well,
right?
Yeah. Well, they claim yes.
So does Iran. So, yes. But still, we keep
and
sending
so the
inspectors over there. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's you know. It's an axis of evil
that Israel is
never involved in.
So. No, of course not. No.
Nope.
Officially, they don't have, officially, they do not have nuclear weapons, officially.
Yeah, yeah.
But.
Well, I mean, and this that, is, yeah. So this is what Iran has always said. Well, officially, we don't either.
Right. Yeah. The North Koreans don't either, but you see their military parades they put out there with nuclear missiles, you know. No, we don't have any. No, we have none of those at all. But what, and I see your point, but back to this, even if they have them or whatever, they removed, the Iranians took them out of their facilities as of this morning. And the Israeli war cabinet, just met. And, you know, I'm going to pull some photos here in just a few minutes of the war cabinet meeting. I'm telling you, it just looks staged to me. It does. It really does.
Yeah.
Of what's going on over there. But I don't have context. I don't have audio of it. It's just a still shot, but everything looks staged, because in my personal opinion, you can tell when that or one of these phone calls by one of these cabinet members or diplomats or whatever, you can tell that they're staged, because they've got the perfectly pressed and draped flag right behind them. You know, and they're holding the phone up, you know, and it's not even touching their ear kind of thing, you know, that, you know, all the clocks are off, you know, that kind of stuff. It's just, it's ridiculous. But if it's true that the Iranians pulled all of the inspectors out, claiming it was because of a security concern or something, and now the Israelis are saying that, we've decided we're going to strike back, that could be a problem, in my opinion, if it's true. I don't know if it's true or not, but we're going to find out in the coming hours at time of recording, because right now, they're saying that they will strike back as soon as possible. And that could mean any time, if that's indeed, that's coming from Israeli state media. Mm-hmm. So if
now,
they're saying that
what
publicly,
what you were telling me in our little sound check was very interesting, that Netanyahu had received calls from the top military cabinet members of different countries, and he had refused to take those calls. So for instance, UK's, I don't know what his official title is, but David Cameron is on his way.
Lord David Cameron.
Lord David.
Yes, he's a member of the House of Lords now. Yeah.
So he's on his way to see Netanyahu. supposedly, ostensibly, to tell him to calm down and cool his jets. But who else did you say was on his way over there?
German Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock, which I think she's really the one that's wearing the pants over here, as opposed to Olaf Scholz. He's not exactly the brightest person, I don't think. But does this or does this not? This is from the War Cabinet meeting yesterday. Does this or does this not look staged to you? I mean, especially from this guy here. It just looks like it's somebody standing off to the side saying, "Okay, everybody, hold it," and then they're snapping the photo.
What's very interesting about the staged effect of it is there's no paper. Everything is in a neat little stack. You see, it's just nobody's actually picked anything up or looked at it or
there's
even
no
opened a bottle of water.
Like you would expect if this was an actual meeting and tensions were escalating, you would expect everybody in that room to be on a phone or be shuffling papers across or something, you know, passing intel reports or whatever to have a decision made. But none of that's actually happening. So you had mentioned that and I'd actually been seeing this. Netanyahu's not exactly the most popular guy. He has been wrought with protests in Tel Aviv over the last, I want to say, what, last 2 to 3 weeks now. And it calls for him to be removed. And when I say protests, I'm not talking about just a couple of thousand people that are out there. I mean, these are between 50 and 100,000 people that are out there saying, all right, that's enough.
Well, he hasn't been popular for a long time. He was not popular for the first few years of the COVID thing, right? He got a lot of protests in the many, many, you know, thousands of people protesting his measures. And then there was some other instrument. I didn't follow it too closely. This was before this war with Gaza. Sometime, I think, in early 2023, something that, again, by the probably hundreds of thousands, the Israelis took to the street and demanded he be removed. Do you remember that? It was.
I do. Yes. It was actually there was the thing with COVID. He was horribly unpopular there. And then that led up to there was something else that caused the calls for him to be removed. I can't remember what it was.
It's a legal thing. It had nothing to do with COVID. It was.
Oh, that's right. It was money. Something to do with money. I remember. And his wife was somehow involved with it.
No, that was the corruption. That was yet again more, you know, this was an actual thing that he was putting through their parliament. And it had to do. It was a weird thing. We should actually find that one down. But yeah, he's been called to step down. Anyway, point being, the Israelis don't seem to like him at all. And the only reason he appears to be there is emergency powers, the fact that he's got a war going on. And if he can keep this war going on forever, he will, because he's obviously power mad.
Well, it also serves in the interest of everybody else that's involved with the cabinet. You know, it'll keep them, you know, and everybody that's in with the, you know, all the IDF commanders and everybody that's involved with the military. It's going to keep all those yes people in line as well.
Yeah. Okay. Now this is something else. Oh, it's the judicial overhaul bill, right?
Okay.
Now I didn't follow it too closely. Yeah, it had to do with the court system, and then right around a little bit earlier than that. This is from March of 2023. Israel passes law shielding Netanyahu from being removed amid protests over judicial changes. So. But that's March of last year. By June and July, this was just completely heated up. So he had a controversial overhaul of the judiciary. I'm trying to see if there's anything here. Okay. This states that only the prime minister himself or the cabinet with a 2/3 majority can declare the leader unfit. Okay. So only he can say, okay, I'm not right. I'm not right in the head. I got to leave.
Unless
or the cabinet
a
with a tooth. Yeah, right. So. And so what I guess he had these plans that were perceived as weakening Israel's judiciary. And I don't have the details. Like I said, I did not follow that closely at the time. But the man is not popular with anybody, it would appear to me, but U.S. politicians. who give
him got two of our biggest allies
standing ovations.
Yeah, and we've got two of our, well, of course, you know, you got the old ice cream eating man in there. But okay. What was I hate when I just have my thought right there and it just eludes me. I think the
the disappearing thought bubble.
Yes, I think the man that scoops the ice cream from behind the counter there, I think that would be our president's biggest inspiration. But yeah, you've got two of our biggest allies in the UK and Germany, both on planes to go over and try and calm this guy down. Has anybody from Washington picked up the phone? I mean, we've been supplying them for many, many years. You know, we've been giving them a whole bunch of money and a whole bunch of military kit. Do you think maybe he can take 5 minutes to pick up the phone?
No, Winkin' Blinkin' and Nod. He's too busy jamming. You know, he has like a songs that he does. Anthony Blinken.
Yeah, Tony Blinken there. Yeah, Mr. Head of the Biden Center that was run by the Chinese Communist Party. Yes.
Yeah. So he's definitely a Janus-faced politician. You know, he'll say out of one side of his mouth, oh, we need to... What did I hear a couple of weeks ago that Israel, the idea, they were pulling some troops out of southern Gaza, and this was just being characterized by U.S. as a rest and reset. And I got to tell you, Johnny, that just made me sick to my stomach. All of the loss of life that's going on over there, and the fact that Netanyahu has said, I'm not going to stop until I get all of Hamas, which is really impossible. So what he's saying is, I'm not going to stop.
Right.
And this is described to anybody who's reading the newspapers as a rest and reset. Oh, we're just going to take a breather here before we go back in and, you know, annihilate some more.
They're going back in now. They had a call up yesterday. They've mobilized, I think they said, three more IDF divisions to go into a new ground operation in Gaza.
Oh, so they've rested and they're resetting.
They're resetting. Okay. Yeah, that's literally what they're doing. So there's no way, as you said, there's no way they're going to stomp all of that out. So it's just, it's a continuous process. But
no,
I heard, if we're finished on that point, I heard you say something.
Is it time for Ukraine?
Yeah, it is, because I heard you say something really interesting, that they're looking to create a new, like a new Israel, a new high-tech Israel in Ukraine. And I thought, yeah, go on. Yeah, because was interesting how you put that, because I thought, hang on a minute, I've heard this before.
Yes, and you had year. You had heard some interesting things. What I saw this morning in the Telegram, in the book club, our little book club that we're doing, which is Carol Quigley's Tragedy and Hope. I just took a peek in there this morning to see who was chatting about what, and I saw an interesting bit of information that had been put out there, and chiefly with one video to back it up, that was saying that Zelensky was calling for the creation of a big Israel and heavenly Jerusalem. So I watched a bit of the video, and I knew the hosts by reputation. I've seen stacks and stacks of their stuff, and I know the slant that they're coming from. It's kind of hard right Christian, etc. But I was taking it all in, and so I did a little bit of my own research on it, and I found, sure enough, last year Zelensky said that unfortunately, going forward, the Ukraine would have to become a big Israel, or the big Israel. And that I sourced that from all kinds of mainstream publications, including the Atlantic Council. And what he was outlining was a series of steps and changes within the country. He didn't, of course, say police state, but that would make it appear to the world and, in fact, be more like Israel from the point of view of security. And naturally, do I even have it up? I probably don't know. I live in a world in which it's stuff filters in and out of my brain like a kitchen colander. But anyway,
leaks like a sieve, huh? Yeah, like a screen door on a submarine. That's it.
But what he was saying is, we had hoped at the beginning of this with Russia, we had hoped that we could protect ourselves as a country and that we could be a liberal European country with a lot of freedoms. But what we are going to be for the foreseeable future of at least a decade is a country that looks a lot like Israel, where you see armed military everywhere, at the malls, at the theaters, at the restaurants, where your defense is based on a person who has to do mandatory service, like the IDF, where it's an individual filtered out to the family, filtered out to your street, filtered out to your neighborhood, your town. That's how he sees defense. And he said modeled very much. And this was all outlined in the mainstream press. Well, what this got married to or wedded to in a series of things which could not be at all documented in any mainstream source was him saying that he or there was an idea that the Chabad with Zelensky were going to create a heavenly Jerusalem in Ukraine. Now, there's plenty of mainstream publication like Haaretz or Jewish Telegraph or whatever who have articles dating back at least to the 2014 situation with Ukraine and Russia that talk about when the Jews ran Ukraine historically, when the Jews were openly in dominance and so forth and so on. But this idea of a heavenly Jerusalem, I can't find it. What you can find biblically and religiously, et cetera, is the idea of a new Jerusalem. But those words do not appear to have come out of Zelensky's mouth. So that's what I was talking about.
Yeah.
In prep. And then you hit back with something very, very interesting.
I did, because as you're sitting there explaining all of this to me, I said, all of this just sounds too familiar. And I had to think for a second. While you were explaining it, I was typing in and going back and looking, and I found it from a year ago. We covered this over a year ago, talking about it. And these are the plans. What do we hear all the time about these agendas that we want to accomplish by what year? You know, it's not 21 anymore. Now it's 2030. So we want to look ahead to what they want to do with Ukraine by the year 2030. Something about that year, I don't know what it is. I cannot quite put my finger on it, but there is something that is supposed to happen. That year is significant in some way. I'm not sure, but there's something that's supposed to go on.
Don't you know, Johnny? I know. It's a total eclipse of the sun that can
that's
be viewed
right.
by everybody everywhere all at the same time.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And you know what? We've never seen a solar eclipse before. Don't pay any attention to the one that just happened the other day that the ABC people on, you know, The View, they told you it was climate change. Don't pay any attention to that. That's fine. I cannot believe the hysteria of people. And I laughed most of the day. And I was asking people all across the U.S., I said, why is it that we're behaving as though we've never seen a solar eclipse before? This is just ridiculous. And people are telling me that they know people with their kids that are sitting out there looking at it without any protective eyewear. And I'm like, do you want to go blind? What is wrong with, like, is this how stupid we are? That's a rhetorical question. Don't answer that.
I am.
But yes, getting back to Ukraine, this is what I found from Ukraine a year ago. This is what they want to do in Ukraine long term. And it lines up with what you were talking about.
Let's look 8 years ahead. 2030. The history of the new Ukraine is studied all over the globe. Why? Because Ukraine became the most digital and convenient country in the world. Scripts have replaced bureaucrats. 500,000 former public servants are successfully integrated in the new economy. No more red tape, but paperless. No more banknotes, but cashless. Yes, we became the first country to abandon paper money. Ukraine now has the best tax system for the IT industry and the most affordable e-residency. Thanks to Ukrainian engineers and programmers, the R&D centers of the world's top technology companies operate successfully, and Ukraine ranks first in the world by the number of startups per capita. Ukrainian courts are guided by artificial intelligence, and all notarial acts take place online. Ukrainian customs is fully automatic and the fastest in the world. Customs clearance and car registration can now be done in three clicks from your smartphone. Because of war and internal migration, we have built the most flexible and modern digital education. Brave military and civilians get quality treatment with modern remote monitoring and e-health systems. Ukraine also has the most effective cyber defense in the world. After the horrors of 2022, Ukraine focused on security systems. Now every production facility has its air defense system, and the sleep of Ukrainians is protected by an ultra-modern Iron Dome. The Ukrainian government is digital, more like an IT company in terms of the efficiency of implementing decisions, and one can register a land plot, start construction, open a business or get a license, and register a car or real estate from a smartphone automatically in one click. Ukraine is the freest and digital. This is all because international partners and the world's leading technology companies supported the Digital for Freedom Initiative and united to help Ukraine recover through digitalization. Building a new Ukraine together, free and the fastest, brave and digital.
Now, if you want to build a society such as that from the bottom up, you have to first destroy what is already existing, don't you?
You do. And I'm going to interject something right now because
yes, please.
This has to do with master builders and the, you know, who runs this ancient system. I put up a talk on the weekend that Alan had done back in 2006. And he made some interesting comments there. He was talking about the old stonemasons and what was represented by the flying buttresses and that kind of architecture, how sciences of all kinds are so far ahead of where we are told that they are. And he was talking about how architects today look at modern architects, our contemporary architects, look at the churches and cathedrals that were built, you know, 500 years ago, 600 years ago, and they are gobsmacked, as Alan would say. They are astonished by the engineering feat that went into this. And the fact that you're looking at a cathedral that didn't get built in a year or 3 years, but maybe 100 years or 120 years. So right there, you're looking at something intergenerational. And he said, you must destroy the old edifice because often these were built over an existing church or existing theater. So this is allegorical a bit here. You must destroy the first cathedral at the same time that you've got the scaffolding and the stonemasons in there erecting the new facade and the new interior and the new architecture. This is how the grand churches were built, and this is how societies are taken down at the same time the new is being erected. And that's exactly what's going on. How do you build something like that in Ukraine? By simultaneously destroying the old.
And you have the main people that are behind all of that, by the way. That's part and parcel sponsored by BlackRock. I know that's probably surprising to you.
Yeah. I'm shocked.
I'm sure you're just overcome with just shock and awe at the moment. And everything that that they're involved with, all the major hedge funds, all the tech companies and everything, they're all just licking their chops, ready to get in there and reinvest in something from the ground up, because they're not investing in China anymore. You know, that mm-hmm. that party's over. They're not investing mm-hmm. in Russia anymore. That party's over. So they're going mm-hmm. to need something else. They're going mm-hmm. to need to go in and rebuild from the ground up somewhere else. Now, I thought, before we go any further, you know, the last time you were on, we were talking about the United Nations and mm-hmm. Because you're going to have UN involvement if you're going to do something like this, right? Because you're going to have international partnerships and everything else going into all of this. And if mm-hmm. you're going to have these kinds of defenses, then you're going to have, I'm just assuming, I don't know this for a fact, but just by looking at that promotional video there, if they're talking about these kind of defenses and going along with what you said, then that means they're probably going to, if this comes to fruition, like this is all in a state of flux. And I do want to talk about what you mentioned there about Quigley and Soundcheck and how they can reshape everything within a matter of years, because I think this is part of that too. But if they can do this, then I would assume, again, I'm just assuming, that Ukraine would get their nuclear weapons back if they're going to have that kind of defense. Wouldn't you assume so?
I would assume so. And remember, one of the key things at stake here is whether or not the Ukraine is going to become a member of NATO.
Yes. Yeah.
And at the moment, it most definitely looks like it is. And why would NATO deny a member nuclear weaponry. They wouldn't.
Well, no, they wouldn't. But well, we that's a tricky one, because you've got a lot of NATO countries that are actually not nuclear powers. So we have deals with them to station ours in their countries, but they're not actually nuclear powers themselves.
No, but I mean, are we actively stopping them, or are they just not at the level where that's a game they can play?
Both.
All right.
Like, for example, we do not share on another front of that. Take the Germans, for example. They don't have nuclear submarines. And I'm not talking about nuclear launch capable submarines. That's out of the question. But they don't have nuclear submarines. They have diesel electric submarines. We will not share that technology with them. The Americans, the French, the Australians, and the British, I believe we're the only ones. We don't even share that with the Japanese. We're the only ones that actually have. Of course, you know, you have the Russians as well. But that's a different kind of reactor system that they use altogether. But we don't share that technology with anybody, even that. You know, that's something entirely different. So, you know, there's several different aspects of this, but I wanted to get to the integrity of the United Nations. I heard you criticizing the UN and how undignified and unprofessional these people can be. And I wanted you to see this, because I found something that is the opposite of what you claimed when it comes to the United Nations and the types of people that they employ to carry out peace operations, right? You know that you're going to need the best people to be able to deal with these problems at the international level, right? You want to have the best representatives, the best diplomats, don't you?
Yes, absolutely.
So how can you look at something like this and not say that you've got your best people on the job? I will not hear of it. I simply will not hear of it.
What's going on?
Well, there's a hardworking diplomat, as you can see, in the back of this vehicle here, this United Nations vehicle. Clearly, that's what it is. As you can see, there.
Is he helping her?
He's helping himself, I think, to whatever is being offered by that young lady there. But yes, there you go. I just had to say it.
The UN is so messy. They're always getting busted in these kinds of compromised situations.
Yes, they are. So that was what I had on Ukraine. I thought that was fascinating how you actually you brought that up. And I thought, wait a minute, something about this does not sound right.
Well, I was just thinking about Ukraine. You know, the other evening, I popped through the family room on my way to the kitchen, and my brother was watching a rerun of the medical show House. And I stopped. Sometimes I say that I'm stopping.
Yeah. I loved it. Hugh Laurie was epic in that. I'm not an entertainment guy, not anymore. But when I did watch it, you could not have gotten a better guy to play that role. You couldn't have.
So I always tell myself that I'm stopping to be sociable, but usually I'm just stopping so that I can make sarcastic commentary or whatever, and it irritate him. But my brother's a good sport about it. But I sat down for a minute, and they were talking about the drug that they needed to use to treat this. They said, well, you know, ivermectin would probably be effective here. Now, remember, this is the horse drug.
Yes, the horse
paste. This is years old. So they're saying that ivermectin would be effective. And I said, well, somebody better give them don't use that. So then the little while later, the story appeared to be that House had married a Ukrainian woman who wanted to get into the U.S. and she had paid him $30,000 to do so. Okay, so that was going on. So my brother told me, and they're rehearsing so that he can put across like they're actually living together. And he said, "Well, somebody's coaching him," and he goes, "Well, where did you meet her?" And he said, "Kiev." And I said, "Hey, didn't somebody tell him that you're supposed to say Kiev?" It's not Kiev, it's Kiev. And then I went to jabbering with my brother. I said, you know, it's just so offensive to me the way Zelensky has to wander around in sweatpants. He has his little sweatshirt all the time. Like he's so busy with his wars that he can't be bothered to, you know, dress like a normal person. It's always got to be this green army, green sweatshirt. And my brother said, yeah, well, he's buying mansions and yachts and so forth, all of which, believe you me, is debunked by the mainstream. Oh, they go, oh, that's fake news. He's not getting rich off this war. No. So sincerely, Zelensky is hungry all the time. He barely sleeps. He doesn't have time to get dressed. That's what's going on. And we can leave Ukraine, but I find it very, very disgusting that we live in a world in which our politicians can just throw millions and millions and millions of dollars at what is nothing, appears to be nothing to me, except a kitty, a little kitty, where those special few people can just reach in and pull out however many million they need.
I think it. I think it goes to the point that you also brought up earlier, where you said that these politicians, none of this is real. None of this is actually real. Even the money that they're throwing around, that's not real either.
That's right. That's right. What is real? And this is the horror of the system that we live in. What is real is loss of life, loss of potential. Real. Yeah. That's real, and that's wrong. That's just.
Yeah.
Evil.
And I was I would like to get into this. I guess we kind of glossed over the Quigley point, but do you want to make that point really quickly? How Quigley said, because you're doing a thing about Tragedy and Hope right now, which is an epic book for anyone that doesn't have it. I highly recommend anybody go out and pick that book up. But how they can change things within a matter of years instead of in decades.
Well, I mean, he does talk about that. I don't have the quote right in front of me. And, you know, this is terrible, but my mind has been a little bit consumed with other things of late. And it's not this getting more done in 5 years of war than 70 years of, you know, just straight education or 20 years of education. In other words, you can completely restructure, remake a society from top to bottom, just the way that little ad piece that BlackRock did for Ukraine.
Yeah.
That is what you can do in 5 years of war. And the people, you know, the people in Ukraine aren't going to have any idea what just happened to them.
No.
They'll go, you know, so this, when did this conflict start? 2022, January, somewhere around there?
Late 2021, early 2022, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And you know, so here we are. So I don't know how much longer it goes on. Now you've got last year Zelensky saying, well, sadly, we're not going to be, you know, a liberal European country. We're just going to have to be big Israel and have lots of military everywhere, you know, lots of policing. What he's really saying there is we're going to have a strong military presence here until the objectives that we have not bothered to tell you about and we will never tell you about have been achieved. Maybe we just got a little hint in that PR video that you showed as to what the objectives are. That's possible.
It certainly is. And it does line up, coincidentally, it does line up with everything that, and you know, social credit is going to be a part of that. That's going to be a mm-hmm. pinnacle of that system. That's going to line up with just about everything within the Chinese social credit system, within whatever they want to do with this, I don't even know what you want to call it here. This crackpot stuff that they have out of the World Economic Forum with Klaus Schwab and these people, where they sell you on this digital society, but they mm-hmm. don't actually tell you what any of it means or what it is. Mm-hmm. They just say, oh, well, you need this or you need that, or we need to do this because of this. But they don't actually tell you the entire picture of it. They just say, well, we need part of this and that's it. But what they're wanting to do per that promo video is literally the whole package. That's everything. Everything is mm-hmm. that is your digital society. That is your Chinese social credit system all wrapped into one.
It would be, and you make a very good point, Johnny. And this includes, because it is one agenda. We look globally at one agenda. We can get caught up in some element of it, but it is one big agenda. And so all of the shocking stories that we're getting, like Scotland's new hate crime bill or the proposed C-63 in Canada, all of that is part of what we can call the Chinese social credit system, but the world that we're going into. Somebody commented on a video that I put up a few days ago, and they said the proposed hate crime bill in Ireland is even worse than Scotland or Canada. It doesn't actually define what hate is, and it has thought crime associated with it, as just merely having a meme on your phone without it having been shared anywhere will give the police powers to enter your home to confiscate all your electronic devices. And if you refuse to give them your passwords, it's an automatic year in jail. If accused of a hate crime, you're presumed guilty and the onus is on you to prove that you're innocent. Now, I had not heard about this in Ireland. I wrote back with this commenter, asked if he had a link, it would be helpful. And he supplied me one. And I have not had time to read it, but maybe I'll just read the first little bit to you right now since I pulled it up the other day when I got it.
Yeah, go ahead.
The Irish government is pressing forward with a new law to criminalize hate speech following the recent stabbing of four Dubliners, including three schoolchildren, by an Algerian resident of the country. As Ireland processes this atrocity, it must be asked, what does criminalizing speech have to do with preventing brutal crimes of this magnitude? In recent months, tensions have flared in Ireland, mirroring those throughout Europe, regarding the country's immigration situation, with nationwide protests demanding government action. The stabbing incident gave rise to riots in Dublin. Coming across as both tone-deaf and opportunistic, the government's positioning of the proposed hate speech law as the solution to the evidently mounting crisis has drawn international condemnation, and for good reason. What happened in Dublin is a horrific tragedy that demands targeted government action with regard to the specific issue at hand, peace and security on the streets of Ireland. Criminalizing free speech, the cornerstone of any democracy, is in no way going to solve this issue. The proposed criminal justice, incitement to violence or hatred and hate offenses bill in Ireland follows the same pattern we see across much of the West. Censorship breeds more censorship, and once the state is empowered to restrict free speech, there is no logical stopping point. The law, currently before the upper house of the Irish Parliament, where it has been stalled since July, will have enormous repercussions for free speech in the country if passed. Most strikingly, for a hate speech bill, the legislation offers no definition of what hate entails, meaning even peaceful expression could fall prey to criminal prosecution. The Irish Minister for Justice has rejected the inclusion of any definition, saying it would hamper the ability of the prosecution to secure convictions. How is the public to know what kind of speech could be subject to prosecution, given that hate is an impossible word to define in law and is not defined in the bill? This paves the way for basically any expression considered unfavorable to be prosecuted in the future.
That's exactly
now,
what
it goes on.
The Canadian bill was, more or less.
Yes.
In more detail,
more or
course,
less.
But
Yeah. And that came out of Newsweek. So this isn't fringe reporting on it, but I'm not going, oh, yay, you Newsweek for covering that. What we're going to see, what we will see over the next several years, because 2030 does appear to be a benchmark or, the 5-year plan or the 10-year plan. And here we are in almost the middle of 2024. So we're in a rush to get a lot of things through right now for this phase. Now, what it looks like, I don't know. A lot can change. We saw this over the last 4 years, how drastically things can change. But I do think that the scenario that you've outlined, I think that's what we're seeing. And the hate crime is part and parcel of bringing about this total surveillance system tied in to your social credit score, tied in to digital currency. I think we'll have lots of excuses and justifications for why this gets implemented so very quickly over the next half dozen years.
Yeah. And one person that has actually taken a step in the last day or so to make that possible was somebody that I've largely not even paid attention to or even heard of. The Speaker Johnson, Mike Johnson, I think his name is.
Yeah.
This guy, I was asking him sound prep. I said, who is this guy? I don't even know who this guy is. Until he was the Speaker of the House, he was just a nobody. I'd never heard of him. Same thing with McCarthy. I'd never heard of McCarthy. Never.
Yep.
Nancy Pelosi, of course, you know who dear old Nancy was. Everybody knows Nancy. She's been around since the Kennedy administration. But Johnson, never heard of this guy. But now he was, you said he was the deciding vote on this whatever this was. And now you've got, what's her name? Marjorie Taylor Greene. She's a real hoot, by the way. And you've got Thomas Massie. They're threatening to throw him out. I think they went with the same, it was the same it was I don't know what they call it, but there's a deal where they make where they can have a single vote to throw you out. That's how they get rid of McCarthy if they do something that they don't like. And I think they did the same thing with Johnson. But he actually introduced or was the didn't introduce. He was the deciding vote against this new surveillance bill. And I'd been hearing some things about it. And when I say a surveillance bill, I mean, this is the whole package, as in the government can now step in, not just a state government. That's bad enough. The United States federal government, namely the National Security Agency, can now basically take over everything at their will if they want.
Yeah.
That is too much power for one agency to have.
My understanding, I don't follow the politics too closely, but my brother was explaining to me that this vote, whether they were going to do this or not, was split evenly, 50-50, and Johnson was the deciding vote. And then the key thing here was this: the metadata that they're scraping on all of us all the time. You'll need to get a separate warrant for each individual, and then the data has to be refined and sifted down to that individual, and a warrant obtained if they think there's probable cause. And Johnson voted against that. He voted against protections for the individual and a warrant that would have to be sifted through and refined for that individual. So, interesting.
Well, there go your private communications. Like,
absolutely.
Any form of, which I would argue they're not even really private nowadays. I mean, look at what you have to give up to use any of these messaging services, right? So Facebook with their WhatsApp, you have to give up names and email addresses for that. Telegram, you have to do the same thing. Facebook Messenger, these other companies, if you go through a lot of these, Signal, you have to give up privacy just to use their services anyway. We use a specific service that I'm not going to get into at the moment, but and a lot of businesses and a lot of governments actually use the same service. And it's interesting because it's an encrypted messaging service. And it's actually interesting because the governments here were clamoring, oh, we need to do something about encrypted messaging services. We have to crack down on them right now. And then they figured out that the biggest problem they were going to run into was they were not going to be able to communicate because those are the systems that they used. So they want to be able to shut down your communication, your private communications.
Yes. Yeah.
But they want to still be able to communicate amongst themselves.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Now, okay. So is Johnson, is his title Senate Majority Leader?
No, he's the Speaker of the House.
No, he's Speaker. He's Speaker of the House.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, third in line for the president, for God's sake.
Right. Okay.
Like I said, I'd never heard of him, but now you have it on the and it'll go to the Senate. I don't know if they can get it passed in the Senate or not. And you know, it's actually interesting. I had said this a couple of years ago. I said that the censorship, because that's basically what this is. This is online censorship.
Yeah.
More or less, the censorship. I will tell you who's going to stop the censorship, and it's going to come from the left side of the aisle in political terms, because they're going to start going
after their own. I heard a little something. Yeah. I heard a little something, too, about a woman in Congress who has been holding up this for a while. I can't remember her name at the moment, but yeah, from the left side of the aisle.
Yes, because once they they're cheerleading for it. But when they realize that that same bill is going to come for them and all of their outlets, then they'll be singing a different tune. And they will. I truly believe this. They will actually stop that. The Republicans won't. The Republicans are too spineless and chicken to actually do anything with it and actually show some backbone and stand up for it. But I believe that the left-wing side of the aisle, the Democrat side, I believe they actually will stop it once it starts coming for them.
Well, there's an interesting little thing that caught my attention yesterday when I was listening to a couple of people talk about, they were kind of reviewing the collapse of the Baltimore Bridge and then these 26 cargo containers that got loose. I don't know if you heard about that. That just happened the other day.
Yeah, it was the barges.
And evidently there wasn't anything they said too toxic that I think three of the containers had coal in them. Some of them were empty. So I don't know the details of that. But as they were talking, they covered an event that I had not heard about, which was the death of a woman named Angela Chow in a small body of water. Yeah. Oh, did you? Okay. So
we
she
did.
Died.
Yeah. You know who that was?
Yes, I do. Okay. I do.
Yeah.
And I find that, I guess if you've covered it, then your listeners already know that. But that's
pretty
crazy.
Oh, no, you can go on and talk about it. That's quite interesting because the last I heard, the Texas coroners said, yeah, this was not an accident.
Yes. I mean, immediately. So what happened is this poor woman, Angela Chow, who's married to some wealthy man in Texas. I don't have all the details on that. And she's done a bit of this and a bit of that. But anyway.
Do you know her? Who her other relative?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
She was on her way home. She was in her Tesla. We are told, the story goes, that she hit reverse instead of forward, and she drove into a body of water and she drowned, and rescuers, they couldn't get there forever and ever and ever. And there were lots of excuses why they didn't, but they pulled the body out and she was dead. And her sister is Elaine Chow, and Elaine Chow is married to Mitch McConnell.
Go figure.
Now, when stories like this, then immediately I thought, well, that's really sad. And that must be, horrifying, to drown that way in that way. And she was spent the last few moments of her life, the last few minutes, calling different friends going, help me, help me, help me. What a horror story. What a terrible story. Then I kept looking and I discover what you just said. This is not the accident that it was conveyed to be. They're investigating it as a crime.
Yes. And oddly enough, less than a week after that incident happened, wouldn't you know, as if just by circumstance, Mitch McConnell said, it's time for him to hang it up.
Yes. That is the point. We say it's not real, but it's a dirty, dirty piece of theater. And people get hurt, people get killed, people get assassinated, people get threatened with loss of life of their loved ones. This happens all the time. It's theater that keeps us engaged, like a sporting event or a coliseum. I mean, bread and circuses. That's what it's about. And yet real stuff happens. Yeah. Woman mysteriously drowns in her Tesla.
Yes.
Turns out to be the sister-in-law of, I think I'll retire.
You could not write this if it were a bad movie.
No.
Produced by Harvey Weinstein. You just couldn't.
Me too.
Yeah. My great-grandfather used to tell my grandfather, and I was told this by my grandfather. He used to say, I'm talking like 100 years ago. He used to say this. He used to tell his young son, who was my grandfather, used to tell him, son, don't ever go into politics, because if you're an honest man, you will be a crooked one when you come out.
Yeah.
And that was 100 years ago.
Yeah. Yep. That's right. And if you're going to stick to your convictions and maintain your honesty, then you're probably going to be a dead one.
Yes, you most certainly will. I had this, and we're gonna wrap up here in just a couple of minutes.
But, all righty.
I saw this. You believe this hour's just flown by? It always goes that way when you're on. We've actually been here for 2.5 hours, but yeah, they always go so fast. But I saw this, and I got this in real time. I'm going to show this to you. This is how fast in real time that bridge in Baltimore came down. Right here's when it hit. So it just struck that column right there. Okay. So it's right at the actual time at the point of impact. Okay. This is not sped up. This is in real time. And watch how fast this thing comes down.
Wow.
In total, if you watch the timestamp at the top, it is less than 15 seconds in real time that whole bridge came down. Unbelievable. Well,
it is. Well, unbelievable is the word there. It is unbelievable.
That is absolutely crazy. Like I said, it has been an absolute pleasure having you back on. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Would you like to tell us about your latest podcast and what you've got going on with that, and about the next podcast you are working on or could be working on or you haven't decided yet?
Yeah, well, the last podcast that came out on Thursday, the 11th, was with Neil Foster. That's my monthly, once a month talk that I have with him. And I'm actually not sure I knew who I was supposed to have on this upcoming Thursday, but I'm not sure that it's going to work out. So I may be flying solo on a little bit of chit chat about this and that upcoming. But I do like the reduxes that I've put up the last few weeks of Alan's talks. I think I've hit on a nice vein of some interesting esoteric things that he's gotten into. I would just encourage people to look at some of the channels that I have going right now. I want to talk about Odyssey because it is my least frequented channel. So I just want to toot the horn there for that one. And it is the odyssey.com/@AlanWattCTTM:D. I'm sure that you can find it just by going on Odyssey, which is spelled O-D-Y-S-E-E, and typing in Alan Watt or CTTM. They have a pretty good search engine. So I always, just want to let people know what's going on out there. And that's pretty much it.
Very well. I look forward to hearing that. And as a matter of fact, you've actually sent Neil our direction. So I'm going to be talking with him tomorrow off the record. And then we're going to be talking about something in the future. He said he's interested in coming on. And I'm interested in having that conversation with him as well. I'm really looking forward to that.
You are going to have fun with Neil. I always just laugh a lot when I'm talking with him, and he delivers great stories. He really keeps up to date on the insanity that we are surrounded by. So you'll have fun. I'm glad he's doing that with you.
Yeah. And there is no shortage of insanity. It's one thing after another every single day. You know, and speaking there of your some of the things that Alan used to talk about, there is one thing. I don't know if you have it, but I'm going to send it over to you. You call them blurbs, you know, the little mm-hmm. talks that he used to do. And he did one about the culture going back about 100 years and how it started around the time with Prohibition and how they introduced like the drugs and alcohol and everything into society and how it's absolutely just wrecked everything. You know, mm-hmm. how they've done that. And I'll be sending that over to you if you don't have it.
Oh, thank you.
It was about a 10-minute talk that he gave. Yeah, it was about a 10-minute talk that he gave. And I'm sitting there like, uh-huh, yeah. Yeah, all of that has happened. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. Yeah, so I'll be sending that over to you.
All right, thanks,
but anyway,
Johnny.
Yeah, that will do it for us for today. It's been an absolute pleasure. You can subscribe to Melissa's podcast at anywhere podcasts are available. And it is Real History with Melissa. And I will see you in 2 weeks. I'd like to thank you for being here today. Thank you to all of the listeners. God bless everyone and have a great evening.